Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is powered by denmeditation.com. Though meditation is the primary focus, the bigger goal is for people to understand and love themselves, thus creating more harmony in the community at large. To find out more about Den Meditation's teacher training programs, retreats, and all things Den Meditation, go to denmeditation.com.
I'm so honestly excited to talk to you, though, because your story, I mean, obviously what you do is insane and it's amazing how many people you're helping. And I know you've told your story so many times, so I'll try and not make you have to repeat some of the stuff that I'm sure feels very rote to you at this point. But I just find what's so amazing, and look, I've interviewed a lot of people, so I've talked to a lot of people who've had huge transitions in their lives, but what a huge change of where you were to where you are now. And it feels, and like you have all these incredible stories of these really amazing spiritual moments that kind of literally hit you in the face, that kind of forced you to look at things differently. And I'd love for you to tell some of them, but I would love to go back a little further. I know your childhood was a little brutal, like a lot of people's, you know, and you've said before that you don't remember feeling necessarily any gifts before some of these things, but you know, for someone who now sees how the world is, the universe is constantly handing you things and like showing you signs. When you look back, are there signs you feel like maybe you just weren't attuned to listening to that now you're like, oh my God, like I just missed that. Cause that's just not the headspace you're in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I remember like, I was about 16 years old. And like my ex-girlfriend and I, we decided that we were going to go traveling. So we bought like an old camper van and we were going to go just traveling around Europe, get out of the England and get away from like the drug scene and all the stuff that we were involved in. And one night before we left, this guy walked into the pub. We were like having a drink with our mates saying goodbye and stuff. And we were going to go the next day. And this guy walks in the pub and he walks up to us. We'd never ever seen him before and we've never ever seen him since. Don't know who he was, but he just walked up to us and he had a little yellow piece of paper. And he came up to us and he said, I hear that you're going traveling. He said, you don't want to do that. He said, take this piece of paper. There's a name and a telephone number on it. And it said Chris and there was a Spanish mobile. And so he said, phone this guy, go to Tenerife in the Canary Islands and you'll get free accommodation and you'll earn at least £300 a week. And like back then we were like, we looked it up. We didn't know where Tenerife was. So we looked it up on the map, realized it was sunny and we were going to get free accommodation, £300 a week, which to us at 16 years old, it was like, this just is great. You know, this is awesome. So anyway, he just walked out of the pub and left. And we sold our camper van the next day and we bought a one-way ticket to Tenerife and we ended up working for this high-profile criminal organization. But when we went there, so many things happened. And if it wasn't for this guy walking into our life to recorrect us and bring us on track, then so many things would not have happened moving forward because I don't know how the universe could have possibly orchestrated it. So this, it was like a walk-in had come in, which at the time I just thought, that's a bit weird, you know, but who is this guy? How did he know? But we just sort of took it on trust. So there's been many things throughout my life like this. When I go back to when I was a child, I used to wake up in the nighttime from sort of 4 or 5 years old all the way through to like 12, 13 years old, screaming. And I'd be climbing the walls. I'd be running around the house, like so scared. And, you know, my mum and dad would just say, it's okay, Jerry, it's a bad dream, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they would just take me back to bed. But this happened all the time, not like once or twice a year. It was like four or five times a month or a couple of times a week. It was like a lot. And it was horrible. When I look back now, I realized that I was getting taken in dream time onto these spacecrafts. Mm. And I was scared of it. You know, there were so many things that happened during my childhood, which I just thought, you know, I don't know, it was a bad dream or it was this or it was that. But it's only now that I've got the insight and now that I can look back down the timeline and actually look back to that time-space coordinate and what actually happened. Ah, that's what happened. And then get the clarity from it, you know. And then there's some things. Well, I mean, I think I was about like 22. And we were smuggling drugs from into Tenerife, and we had some ecstasy tablets that we took in a car from Amsterdam in Holland to, and we were taking them to Tenerife. But something happened with the boats, and so the car couldn't go onto the boat. So I had to fly from Tenerife with my friend, take all the ecstasy tablets out of the dashboard, and the guy that I went with, he was going to fly them back, and I was going to fly back with him. I was lying in bed the night before we were going to go back, and the weirdest thing happened. This is like my sort of first intense spiritual experience, but I didn't know it was a spiritual experience. I was lying in bed in this really weird, shitty old apartment block, and I sort of came out of my body, and I was hovering above my body, and there was this like light that bended over my body from above, and I'm kind of there, and suddenly I start falling, and I'm falling really fast, but I'm only like 2 meters above my body, but it felt like I was falling hundreds of meters. And then suddenly my body was a rose, and I fell into the rose. And what happened during this process, I was taken to this really busy place, and it seemed like an airport. I saw signs and stuff, but it was hazy as well. Like, you know, when you're in that spiritual world, sometimes it's not 100% clear. But I had this really bad feeling when I woke up that I really should not get on the plane with this guy, and I shouldn't put this guy on the plane either. So I phoned my friend, and what we did is we bought some different tickets. I stuck him on a plane to Madrid business class and then back to Tenerife. When he got back, he went through okay. I went back on the same flight that I was supposed to go on. When I got off my flight, me and my friend stopped at a nightclub on the way home. And literally 5 minutes later, police come in, they shut down the music, and they dragged me and my friend outside to the car, and they searched the car. So someone had told them that there was supposed to be drugs in the car. But something mystical, magical, my higher self, I don't know, something stopped me getting on that plane by giving me that kind of experience and that vision. So there was a number of things that happened throughout my life where I should either be dead or in prison, or something should have happened that shouldn't have been good. But the universe sort of, you know, took me out of harm's way. And I truly feel it's because I had to do star magic and go on this mission. So they kept me safe to do this because they knew at some point in time, I'd kind of, you know, see the light and come around, you know?
And it's so interesting. And yeah. Do you feel like you were, well, what do you feel when you take an incarnation? Do you feel like you choose the incarnation? Do you feel like it's decided before? Like the reasons of kind of your childhood going into where you went into?
Yeah, I think there's different reasons. I think, you know, on one hand, We do choose. We choose our parents. We choose our experiences. Like there's these lives that are kind of mapped out for us. And we have some element of choice in that. When we come down onto the planet, we're supposed to get full recall. But because of the processes that we go through, which aren't 100% natural, they shut down our memory. They blank slate our memory. So we have no recall. So we've got to go back to Groundhog Day and learn all over again. There are some souls that leave this planet and they get literally brought back in a heartbeat, like a whirlwind, within seconds or minutes or an hour, and they have no choice. They just agree to come back because they're shown a life review, or they're corrupted or manipulated on the other side once they leave their body into coming back down again, because, you know, humans are a food source to certain beings. You know, we're in a frequency war. So yes, sometimes we choose these lifetimes. They don't always pan out the way that we would, that they're kind of mapped out, because there's multiple convergence points where we're making choices as human beings. That's the beauty about this game, because when we come down here, we do have free will. So we sometimes make some different choices, and it sends us off on different tangents. But ultimately, you know, we're here to try and find our way back to our heart. Some of us find it easier than others. For me, it was very difficult, but I got there in the end.
I was going to say difficult, but then you do it better than most of us do. So that's what's pretty impressive. Talk a little bit. You just said, you know, some people turn around really quickly and don't necessarily have a choice of that next incarnation. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, when we leave our body, we're supposed to have choices. And we do have choices, but sometimes those choices are manipulated. So our light body and our soul are two completely different things. And the light body and the soul split, and the light body is supposed to go through a cleansing process and pick up the soul on the other side. And that cleansing process could be 100 years, it could be 500 years. But in the grand scheme of this vast universe, 100 years, 500 years is a blip, mm-hmm. you know, in the vast ocean of time. So it's nothing. That's what's supposed to happen. But what often happens is we come out of our body, and there are other beings on the other side. And what they want to do is to get our soul back into another human vessel, because it's energy. And once the energy is inside the body and the consciousness and the soul is powering the human vehicle, beings, humans on this planet can then corrupt that human, you know, put it into a state of fear, put it into a state of guilt, put it into a state of this. And then on those low frequency vibrations, other beings can feed off of that on planet and off planet. So we still choose to come back, because what they'll do is they'll say, listen, you've just left your body. It didn't really go too well, did it? And so they'll show you like a review of all the things that didn't go too well. And you're like, you know what? I didn't really do too well. So that you think, you know what? I want to make it right. I want to make it right. So boom, you're back in there. And then you've forgotten everything again. And you're waking up as this little baby, or being rebirthed as this little baby. And the game starts back at zero.
I mean, that's so interesting. Are there things you can do in the current lifetime to prevent that from happening?
It's about just being present. Like the game here on Earth is the same as the game out in the universe. Like once we leave this physical body, the whole matrix that we're playing inside of, which is multiple dimensions, trillions of planets and galaxies. And so like this game we're playing here, it's played elsewhere in higher dimensional spaces. And the ultimate key to mastery in all of these games is to be right here, right now. In these human physical bodies, it's a lot more difficult, because we have the ego, we have the brain. I mean, the brain's so powerful, but it's just so corrupted. I mean, our body and brain is like a biological computer. That's how we're able to facilitate the healing of people so well, because we use the brain as a computer system to change the programs. But what other entities do, what other corporations do, which are ultimately controlled by other entities, is they manipulate the consciousness of humans, other sentient beings, to be in a perpetual state of low vibration so that they can be controlled. But whilst we're here on Earth, if we master presence, if we start living from our heart space, we can see and feel all of this stuff around us. We realize that the space between you and I, there is no space. It's just full of code, mathematics, energy. And once people start to tap into this, they start to understand the truth and the magnitude of this amazing multiverse that we live and play the game of life in. And so by becoming present here, when you come to that point of death, which isn't really death, it's another rebirth, you're not scared. You know, if you watch people, not always, but you watch a lot of people when they're on their deathbed, their soul will be coming out the body, but the ego, like, it holds on. It puts fear into them. So you see them coming out their body and they go, like they get scared or something, and then they go back in again. And sometimes that can happen for 20 minutes or 3 hours or whatever it is, they're in and out. But when you get to your deathbed and you know, the only thing that you're excited about is actually transitioning, because you've had every other experience on planet Earth, because you've lived a life of love and not of fear, you actually look forward to that transition. So you can move out of your body really slowly. You can look around, you can look back at your body. There's no fear. You're just completely in harmony with the whole experience. And then you're going to know what is real and what is corruption and manipulation. And then you can say, you know what? Nah, I'm not going there. I'm going over there. And you can start making better choices on the other side. And you can go on the journey that you want to go on. maybe go and drink some tequila on another planet somewhere and put your feet up. I don't know.
Do they drink tequila on other planets?
They do. They have spirits. They have like elixirs and stuff that changes your frequency and kind of makes you high. Yeah, they have ayahuasca. They have psilocybin. They have ayahuasca in a kind of a liquid blue, multidimensional form. Yeah. So they do have stuff on other planets. Absolutely.
So fascinating. So when you say, like, because now you're so present, and I know you've told some stories about, you know, times you've kind of noticed some of the negative energies. Have you ever, let's say, you know, gotten on an interview or something where you felt like you had to do this thing and you're like, I don't trust that, or that's not okay, what's over there?
Yeah, like if I'm asked to do something and it's not in alignment for the greatest growth, I'm not going to do it. This was a massive thing for me because I really struggled for years with speaking my truth. Like my biggest trauma coming into this world was rejection. Like I was fostered, adopted, raped as a baby, all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I had no trust. So I had no trust in myself. I had no trust in other people. So actually.
But it's so interesting because you trusted the guy with the little yellow piece of paper.
Yeah, I did. But I don't think I trusted him. In we didn't go just because we trusted him. We went because of the sun and the money. The sun and the money, you know. But there must have been some kind of element of trust. I don't know. But yeah, the money and the sun were the kind of real reasons we went. Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted. You were saying how basically you grew up, you didn't have trust. This has been a hard thing for you to be able to.
Yeah. So like, yeah, having trust has been a massive thing for me. Even coming out and speaking publicly, the first time I did it, I was going to run off the stage and go home. Like I was so scared.
Really?
Like I remember being at school and having to do like a presentation. And I was going to go to a church to give a talk on this guy. He was like a local guy to where I lived. And I had to talk about him for like 10 minutes or something, which seemed like an eternity because I was so scared. But I had to do a practice thing at school. And I was like 12, 13 or something. I was just getting into my teenage years and my voice was breaking. I was going through puberty. And I remember getting up on stage and my voice squeaked. And the whole school laughed at me, like 400, it was a boys' school, 400 boys. They were just like laughing like crazy. So that just made me feel really small again. So actually coming out and coming into the world and speaking my truth, it wasn't easy to start with. Now I don't care. I'm really happy and comfortable. But when people used to like say, oh, do this or do that, I used to find it really hard to say, no, I'm not doing that, because there was this rejection part of me that would like deep down be like, well, if I say no to them, they're going to reject me. So I better say yes. Oh. All that programming. So that's stuff that I've had to strip out, you know? So, yeah.
When do you remember when you kind of got it? Like did it? Do you remember that moment? You're like, oh my God, like that was different, but I did it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a process. It was like, I thought I'd got it, but I hadn't got it. And then I thought I got it. And then the next time it got a little bit easier and I thought I'd got it, but actually it got easier and easier. And it's probably only in the last few years that I've got really comfortable.
Wow.
You know, we started Star Magic 7 years ago, and even coming out and doing that was very difficult because all of my old mates were on a completely different vibration to this stuff. So going out and talking about angels and fairies and extraterrestrials and all of these quantum beings, like, you know, I was like, man, they're going to think I'm crazy. And they did. So that was another process.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because when you talk so much, like, you know, one of the stories, which feels like it was kind of your first before the big one, which was when your wife at the time, you know, was like, there's a ghost in this house, and you kind of didn't believe her. But that is kind of what set you off to go start working with this woman, right? And then the car accident, which you can talk about, happened a little bit after that, if I recall. But you called a mate, and the mate was the one that hooked you up with the woman.
Yeah.
So, and I kept in my head, I kept being like, what friends of yours when you were like in such a criminal world were like, dude, you gotta like go to this woman. Like, talk to me about that, because I was always so curious how you bridged
the guy that I phoned and I spoke to was somebody that I met in Tenerife, and he became like a really good friend, and he was the godfather of my daughter. And you know, he one of his old friends was really good friends with this lady that became my spiritual teacher. So she had said to him, you've got to sort your life out because you're on such a dark path. You should really go and see this lady. So he ended up going to see her and had a session with her. And so he'd met her through this lady that kind of like took him by the scruff of his neck and brought him along. And so when I had this experience and I phoned him up, I didn't even know that he knew this lady.
That's random.
He just said to me, you know, you should really give this lady a call. And that's when I phoned her. Yeah. And you know,
I mean, that's fascinating in of itself that he wouldn't normally be connected to her either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, both of us were on the same path.
But yeah. Then what was it in you? Okay. So you phoned her and she basically, because when you tell the story, and you should tell it's more fun, that basically your wife called and there was like a priest doing exorcisms like everywhere.
Yeah. So I'll share the story. So like what happened is, I was watching TV, like this is back in 2005, you know, we threw our TV away in 2008 or nine, but like back then I used to watch TV all the time. So I'm sat there on Sunday evening watching the TV and my ex-wife comes downstairs and she says, Jerry, I feel really scared. She said, every time I close my eyes, I see all these dark images and I hear all these dark voices. And when I'm pushing the pushchair down the road in the morning, something's trying to make me push the pushchair in front of one of the cars. And I looked at her and I thought, man, you sound crazy, you know? But I said, what do you want to do about this? She said, well, I want to phone my friend. And her friend was a woman that was a priest. So the woman comes around the house, she's putting crosses up, dousing the house with all this energy. And I was sat there thinking it was like something out of the Poltergeist. I'd never experienced anything like it. So anyway, she calmed her down, she went to bed. Then the next day, that's when I phoned my mate. And I said, listen, some weird stuff happened last night. What do you make of it? He goes, you got to call this lady. And that's when I called her. But she didn't answer. And she called me back a little while later. And she said, you know, what's happening? I told her. She said, where do you live? And I said, 316 Richmond Road. That's the only bit of the address I gave her. And there's loads of Richmond Roads in the UK, you know? So anyway, she goes, hold on a minute. Have you been knocking some walls down? I said, no, we rent the property, but the previous owner has definitely built an extension. She goes, yeah, you've got an angry old man in your house. So I'm thinking, angry old man, I've never seen this guy, you know? So I said to her, what am I supposed to do about this? She goes, oh, I'll get rid of him for you. I said, okay, well, when are you going to come round? And she said, well, I don't need to do that. I can do that from here. And she was like a 4-hour drive away at the other side of the country. So anyway, I put the phone down. I went home. I said to my missus, listen, I know I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but I spoke to this lady about what happened last night and she reckons there's an angry old man in the house. And my ex-wife turned around to me and said, yeah, I know, I've seen him. I said, you've seen him? She goes, yeah. So I thought, right, okay, you've seen him. This lady's seen him. You've never spoken. You got no common friends. There must be some truth to it. And I'm curious. When I discover something, I'm like, right, I need to find out everything. So I phoned her back up. I said, I don't know what you do, but I have to book an appointment. So I went and saw her that week and I had my first past life regression. And when I sat down in her chair for the first time, she said to me, have you got anything you want to work on? I was like, what do you mean? She said, have you got any problems? I was like, nah, I'm fine, you know? But anyway, so I used to have these really weird thoughts, right? So I'd phone Laura, my ex-wife, and if she didn't answer, I'd get really scared. I would think that someone has come in the house, they've strung her up, they've done all horrible things to her, and I'd see this blood and all this stuff. Oh. And I'd phone her like so many times and she wouldn't answer the phone. And I sometimes would get in the car and drive home like a nutter. So anyway, I told the lady that I have these experiences and she said, would you like to go and find out why? I said, yeah, if you can help me, like let's do it. So she regressed me into a past life where I was a Saxon warrior.
Wait, hold on. And you were totally open to it? Like, because that's interesting. A lot of people would be like, you're a nut job. What the fuck? And then not actually, because you have to be open to it for it to work.
Yeah, to a certain extent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, I'd had the proof that like they both saw this angry old man. I knew something was going on, you know, and these thoughts and feelings that I were having were real. So if she could help me, then, you know, I'm going to give it a whirl. So she took me back to this past life and I was on a boat and I was a Saxon warrior and all the men were packing up bags and stuff from the reservation. And I could see in the distance on this like bit of grass on the side of a hill, there was like the wives and the children, they're all back there. And this other tribe came through on horses, and they trampled all over my children and slit my wife's throat. And it was the same souls, my children in that lifetime as this lifetime, in the same soul as my ex-wife. So anyway, she guided me how to go in and bring all of this into healing. And I never, ever had those thoughts and feelings again. So
never.
So wow. That's going back like 20 odd years now. So I said to her, like, I want to come again. Like, when can I come back? So anyway, I was like a crackhead with this stuff. I wanted just like get more of it. So I was going back 2 or 3 times a week, going into all these past lives. And this lady worked for Scotland Yard in the psychic division. So she was solving murders and crimes and all this sort of stuff. So she taught me how to remote view, how to bring my light out of my body and travel, like all of these cool things. She taught me how to do rescue work and just, yeah. And I was fascinated. I saw her 2 or 3 times a week for several years.
Is she still alive? Do you, because I feel like, have you ever done a past life where you two were in it together?
Yeah, well, we don't communicate anymore. She's on a different path than me. But whilst we were working together, we had some Knights Templar realities together. There was an African reality that we had together. There was a few different lifetimes where we'd worked together in different ways. Yeah.
Have there been some past lifetimes for you that you're like, oh shit, and it's so clear why you do this work now? Like, have you been doing this work a lot in many lifetimes, I guess is my question.
Yeah. You know, when I was working with her, I didn't really discover loads about that. Although I'd been an alchemist. I'd done loads of stuff like to do with kind of the spiritual arts, but I never really sort of connected that with what I'm doing now. Because at the time when I was working with her, there was no star magic. Right. You know, like I was working with her up until about 2009. And, you know, we didn't start Star Magic until 2016. But since starting Star Magic, and I've been into loads of past lives myself, and I discovered a tribe called the Kaaranu tribe, which are a tribe from Avion in the Cradle of Lyra. They're like half human, half lion, half lioness. They're massive. They're like 4 foot tall.
And
they've got like these kind of like feline heads. I mean, they're amazing. And they had these like emerald pyramids, which weren't really pyramids, they're octahedrons, because they had a female counterpart that, at the bottom. But we used to sit in them, and they showed me how we used to open portals with these crystals, how we used to phase into reality, out of reality, do loads of kind of like stargate, planetary work, alchemical work, and also healing. But healing then was so normal. Like now, like energy healing, I mean, it's much more normal than it used to be. But everybody was doing it back then. Like if someone had something going on with them, they would just tap in and get everything sorted. They could regrow limbs at the drop of a hat. So like the stuff that we're doing now, we're only scratching the surface, you know, in that sort of 6th, 7th, 8th dimensional space. I mean, you know, magic and miracles were just instantaneous, you know?
Was there death?
Yeah. Say that again.
Was there death in the traditional form? Was there like transition?
Transitions, yeah. But they stayed on their planets and their stars for much longer. You know, they didn't just sort of leave a body because of ill health. You know, because they could stay alive as long as they wanted to, because they knew how to do that. It was longevity. If they wanted to exit their body, it was because they would choose to exit their body and either go into a different form, or go back to source, or maybe incarnate somewhere else, or maybe just get some respite.
So you've traveled obviously a ton with them, and you work with them a lot, where you know that you are, this is where you come from, right? Have you ever entered a past life where you saw that lifetime that you were actually there?
Yeah, I've been back there. So my girlfriend that I'm with now, in a past life on that planet, my son that I have now was our son on that lifetime. Oh, so I remember back to like, so Avion had the first Garden of Eden, and there was they birthed a lot out of there. And I remember when the Draco reptilians attacked Avion, and there was a massive war. I don't know whether it was at the start or whether it was like into the war a little bit. I'm not 100% sure exactly when, but I just remember running, and I scooped my son up in the other reality, and my soul of my girlfriend, she was a feline being then, we were running, and we opened up a portal, and we ran through the portal, but we didn't close it down quickly enough on the other side. And so one of the other beings got through, the enemy, and just literally exterminated us on the floor with these kind of laser technologies. Yeah.
Wow.
But that's a kind of a harsher one, but I've had loads of beautiful ones too, you know?
So when you met your girlfriend now, was there a knowing right away?
For her, there definitely was. She saw me on TV. We used to have a Romanian TV show. And so I was on Romanian TV every Friday night. And one day she was guided just to turn the TV on. And she saw me and she was like mesmerized for like the whole TV show. Obviously, I didn't meet her for about 18 months later. But when she turned on the TV show, I was talking about my wife and children. And her, the universe was saying to her, this is the man that you're going to be with. And she was like, but he's talking about his family. And the universe was like, well, it's not time yet, obviously. And so anyway, she had to go through that experience. And then she came to our training about a year later. And we really got on with each other. I definitely felt something from the very start. But I was in another relationship, you know? So there was kind of like nothing really going on. But I did feel some feelings. And then what happened is we did a plant medicine retreat in Holland and someone dropped out at the last minute and my higher self said, call her. Her name's Laurie. Mm. Call Laurie. So I phoned her up and I said, what are you doing? She said, nothing. I said, do you want to come to Holland and come to our deepened space retreat? Someone's just pulled out. You can have the space for free. So she said, absolutely. So she went through the most weirdest set of experiences to try and get a flight. It was like the whole universe was trying to stop her. But anyway, she turned up the next morning and kind of on that retreat, we kind of sort of like got together and like we were twin flames. You know, we've had a wild relationship the last few years. It's been really hard, really magical. But, you know, you mirror each other's kind of deepest elements. So yeah. it's been like steel sharpened steel. The two of us have been refining to get ourselves to these places that we're at now. It's been beautiful, but tough. She's been one of my greatest teachers, you know?
What was it like with your ex-wife? So she was with you in Tenerife, right? You were dating there, right? And then you guys came over. So she knew you as like the guy who was, you know, making a ton of money in the criminal world and like drugs and fun and party. But correct me if I'm wrong, because I wasn't there. It seems like she was pretty supportive of your transitions. Like, talk about that, because again, from the world you live to then what you started really embracing, it's polar opposite. So how was that?
So it started off great. So like she went and started learning Reiki and she was doing all of this stuff and I was going out and doing star magic and I thought, you know what, we're probably going to ride this train together forever, you know, like, because even when I was up to all my old stuff, she was never really like comfortable with it. She didn't really like it. You know, she's one of those, she's one of those kind of like people that is like, you know, a good citizen. It's probably a good way to say it. You know? Doesn't really do anything wrong, you know? And
I love
so
that
like,
you were with a good citizen during that time of life. That's hilarious.
I think it probably kept some balance in my world, you know? But what happened is star magic started growing and it sent her into depression. It's the only way I can describe it. And she got more and more depressed. And the more star magic grew, she just kind of went more introvert. And instead of sort of like coming along for the ride, she just went in. And then I remember we're in the kitchen one morning. So we homeschooled our children. I pulled the kids out of school. I was like, I'm not sending them to school, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, she wanted them to go. But when they did decide to come home, we had different parenting styles. Mine was like, do whatever you want, work it out. And hers was like a little bit more kind of like structured and stuff. And she wanted them to do this and do that. And she was a bit more disciplined than me. And even though I'm an extremely disciplined human being when it comes to exercise and business and all the things that I need to do to be a good human. But in terms of like freedom, I'm a very free, sovereign human being. And I wanted the kids to discover it for themselves. So I put them on that kind of trail. And she went more and more depressed. And one day she had an argument with my son in the kitchen. And he had a knife in his hand and he cut her hand. Not on purpose, but they were just messing, you know, sort of like arguing. And she went into the lounge, she went onto the floor and her whole body went pale. I saw all of her veins come through and her soul just came out of her body. And so I got her soul and I brought her soul back into her body. And then it happened again about 2 months later. We were just going for a walk up the hill. She just lay down on the floor and started coming out of her body. She was just that, like, wanting to leave the planet, that depressed. Wow. So she decided that she was going to go for a walk, do the Camino walk from France to Spain. Yeah, so she went off and did that, and she phoned me up one day and said, I've met another guy. I'm not coming home. So the kids stayed with me. She went and moved to Switzerland, and that was it. You know, I just continued building Star Magic. The kids traveled with me, and yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, that's fascinating, actually.
I'll tell you something else that's really, yeah. really interesting around this kind of story, right? And this is how amazing the universe is. Because the morning that she told me she wasn't coming home, I was meditating on a hill. And it was the same hill that I was meditating on when one of these blue beings, the Lyrans, came to see me and told me that I had to build these healing centers. So I'm meditating in the same place. And I get this really strong pull that I need to go to Avebury, where they got a stone circle, a big stone circle through three fields. It's amazing there. And I didn't have my phone or anything. So I can't just go because I've got to tell the children that I'm going. So anyway, I drove home. I got my phone. I said to the kids, listen, I'm going to Avebury. I don't know why I need to go down there, but I'm going to go down and be back in a few hours. So I go down to Avebury. I get out of the car and I hear someone shout my name. And I look around, there's a lady there called Lisa with her friend who'd been to our Star Magic training. So I went over to speak to her. She goes, Jerry, I've got some DMT. And I'd really been wanting to try some DMT and I hadn't tried it. She goes, do you want some? I said, you know what? I'd love to. Let me grab your number. I'm going to go over to the stones. I need to do a little bit of work, but I'll give you a call afterwards. So I go over. I'm sat on this kind of like hillside over the road from the stones. And my phone rings and it's Laura. And she tells me that she's met another guy. I asked if you had sex with him. She said, yeah. I'm crying my eyes out, streaming my eyes. And then I sort of get myself together a little bit. And I go down and sit by one of these stones. And I had a sketch pad with me. So I'm sketching all these kind of light codes. They were like these galactic peace codes they were downloading, which I got tattooed on my back. And this Palladian craft came over and they were connecting with me and all of this sort of stuff. And I went through this experience. Anyway, I finish, I phone Lisa. I said, where are you? So she told me where she was. I went over to her and her friend and we laid down over the back of the stones in the ditch. It must've been like 5, 6 in the evening. It was a sunny evening. It was just sort of like the sun was going down and I smoked this DMT and there was a few clouds in the space and my heart just burst open and I just started laughing. I was like, how can I be mad at her? How can I be mad at her for going off and having sex with someone else and meeting another guy? Because we're all one. So it was like the universe had orchestrated this experience for me so I could go and get the worst news in my life.
And help you through it.
And there was someone there to put me right with DMT afterwards. I mean, it was nuts. I mean, it still wasn't easy straight away afterwards, but I kept tapping back into that experience. And every time I tapped back into that experience, I could sort of like harness that level of unity, and it just helped smooth out the process for me.
And then for that element of trust that you were saying you didn't really have, how did that play into it?
In terms of?
We were saying like growing up, you didn't trust because of like how your childhood was. And then so for her leaving like that, how healed were you at that moment in trust?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, on a conscious level, I didn't like comprehend that it had affected me like that. But moving forwards through the next years of my life, I saw how it did. So like, you know, even going, when I started Star Magic, I had no trust. You know, like the trust, I reckon it's only in the last sort of a year to 18 months that I've really got to this kind of real high level of trust. You know, and I've still been tested by many people since with trust, and I've just had to let people go out of my life. And now I'm just grateful. Instead of thinking, you know, blah, 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 you know, it affected this or that or whatever it was, you know, I just let it go. Just be grateful for the experience with the people and move on. But I mean, this is a wild experience, I'll tell you now. Like about 2 months ago, I was in Mexico. When I was born, like my real mum, she didn't tell her parents that she was pregnant.
Oh, was so, she young?
Yeah, she was young and she was out of wedlock, so it was frowned upon. So she said she was going to college. So she went from Birmingham to Cheltenham, and when it was time to give birth to me, they took her into this room. And two men in these black masks walked in, and a lady in a black mask. They didn't say anything to her. They just got a massive pair of scissors, parted the legs, cut her vagina and ripped me out. And they went and put me on a metal bed, and they left her bleeding for hours, me screaming in the other room and crying. And then they came back in hours later. No, they didn't say anything to her. No medication. They just stitched her back up. And then that was the last time we were together. I found her when I was 24 years old.
How?
It was Mother's Day, and I was with my adoptive mother, and I went to take my adoptive mother out for lunch on Mother's Day. And when I went into the pub, a mate of mine from school, he was adopted too, and he told me that he'd found his real mum. So I asked him how he did it, and he did it through not social services. It was some kind of like agency that you can go to, and they sort of pull up your records and they go through this process. So anyway, yeah, like I ended up finding her, and we had a whirlwind relationship for a couple of years. But she told me obviously about the birth thing and all that, and you know, and then I found out a little bit later that my foster parents actually raped me. Now, when I was in Mexico a couple of months ago, it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wake up and I see myself in cling film as a two-year-old baby, and my real dad is there and my foster parents, and they're raping me with a bit of wood. And every time I'm about to pass out with the cling film, they put a hole in my mouth, and they so I don't kind of pass out from not being able to breathe. So anyway, I dealt with that, and I brought this little piece of Jerry into healing and blah blah blah. When I was coming out of it, I said to my girlfriend, I'm sure there's some military programming involved in my life. But I didn't think too much of it, because I said to her, I've got photos of me when I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, so how could I have been in some kind of military program? Anyway, about 8 weeks ago now, the universe was trying to get me to look at something, and I wasn't really getting the messages. So I woke up the next day and I couldn't walk. I was literally on crutches. My right knee, just I could not put any pressure on it. So I had to be still. Now, going back to last November, I lost all the car documents for my car, and I was phoning the company, and I sent off all the documents to apply for new ones. And it's supposed to come through in a few weeks, but 6 months have gone past, still nothing. I'm phoning, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we're ever so sorry, but we just can't help you. We don't know, you know, we don't know what's going on. We'll call this department. Anyway, so this day I go in to do this healing, and I've been working with this council of the grandfathers, who are these really ancient beings. They're like 70 foot tall. And they've been showing me how men cannot support women, because they're not mature enough, because women mature faster than men. So it's the grandfather energy that has to be embodied by the masculine to support the feminine. So they've been teaching me all this stuff. And we actually did our first retreat about 4 weeks ago called Savage Man. And it was all about helping men support women. So I'd gone through this process as well at the same time, to be sort of geared up, ready for that kind of that retreat as well. But anyway, I'm going through this kind of healing process, and I see myself as 2 months old again, and I'm in a car. And my foster parents, the woman has got me on a lap, the man's driving, and I'm above the car, like looking from a third party perspective. And we're going through Oxford in England, and we go up this lane to a massive big mansion. They get me out of the car and they give me to these two men in black military uniforms. They take me into the house, into an elevator, which was green, down 11 stories into this white corridor. When we went down this white corridor, there was a Stargate. They took me into this room, and they had this metal thing on my head, which was electrocuting me. And they were putting drops of LSD on my tongue. And they had these like electromagnetic lions and wolves, and they were basically scaring the shit out of me. So I was watching this happening, and I watched it play out down the timeline till I was about 5 years old. So I'm saying to the grandfathers, like, how is this possible? If I went through this experience up until 5, how did I go from 1 to 5 normally as well? So that they showed me what they did is they got me to 5 years old, then put me back through the Stargate back to 2 months, and then went and took me back to my mum and dad, my foster parents, with all of that trauma. And then I was adopted into this new family with all of that trauma. So what happened is the grandfathers, we got little baby Jerry out of this place and we took him up to space to this realm of the grandfathers where they got these big eggs, like these kind of plasma eggs. So I was inside of it healing. And the divine mother came in. The grandfather was there. They pulled some implants out of me, these jellyfish out of my head. And anyway, I'm crying my eyes out on the sofa going through this process. It was, I was so happy. I was so relieved. Like it was so many emotions and I was sobbing like a little baby. And then my phone rings. I'm like, who is that? So I answered the telephone and it was the driving agency, the DVLA. They said, we're ever so sorry, Mr. Sergeant, that we've delayed your documents, but we're going to post them out tomorrow morning. They're ready for you. So it was the universe just wanting me to go through this process to heal this part of me so I could go on this next part of my mission with these grandfathers. So,
isn't it interesting? I mean, because you've done so much healing, not only for others, but for yourself, and you've been privy to so much deep, incredible healing from all these other beings. Talk about, and you're saying this is what, just 8 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, this is really recent, yeah.
So talk about that idea of different levels of healing, of how that did not come up for you through so much of this trauma that I'm sure you've already released.
Yeah, like if I go back through my rejection, to my rejection trauma and stuff, I mean, I dealt with this stuff so much. I remember being on so many ayahuasca ceremony floors, puking my guts up and all of this trauma coming out into the bucket. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's the last piece now. And I've been through lots of different bits here and there, but it's like layers and stages, you know?
Okay.
And, you know, I might go a year and everything's great. And then boom, there's another stage, you know? And I always say to myself, you know what? I reckon that's it now. And then another thing comes up, you know? And like with this thing now, I'm like, this must be the last stage. Surely this is the last stage, but who knows? There could be another level.
It's so interesting how it's just there. You know what I mean? Because that's huge. Like that's some heavy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Heavy trauma.
Yeah, I don't think I was ready to deal with it until now. That's the other thing. I reckon if I'd have even tried to get my head around this 5 or 6 years ago, I couldn't have even gone there, I don't think. You know, but we in Star Magic, we deal with so much satanic ritual abuse. So we deal with some of the worst cases on the planet, and going in and working with these, it's upskilled me so much. And what I found is like, it's always much easier to work on other people than yourself. So I think for me to go and go on this journey and work through this myself and get it done, I had to have thousands of other healing experiences with myself, other people, you know, all over the planet and beyond to be at the right place to be able to deal with that when it came up.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because you talk about trust and you're saying you're only recently learning how to like truly trust on the high level. And I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit too, because so much of what you do and what you say when you're teaching, you know, is like, just trust it. Use your imagination and trust that it's happening. Like it's magic. It's real. Like you've had to, on some level, you've really had to trust. Like you've had to trust that all this stuff is happening, that you can do healing in this mannerism. And so it's interesting that there's this other side of trust that was still peeling off.
Yeah, like, you know, if I've got an audience of however many people and I say to someone in the crowd, has anyone got any problems or anything they want healed? And someone puts their hand up. There's not a question in my mind that when I bring them onto the stage that I'm not going to be able to not heal them. Like there's not even a single tiny little doubt. I just know that their back, their spine, whatever it is just going to get right. When I go in to do my work and I'm healing, I trust everything that I see in terms of the fact that I'm seeing it, but I don't always trust that it is what it's presenting itself to be. Because like, you know, you go into the quantum field and you might have some really dark negative being pretending to be your dead granny. So you think, oh, it's dead granny. Oh, thanks for coming to help me. So you open yourself up to that and you let something in the back door. So you've always got a question. You've always got to use discernment whilst you're blending that and alchemizing that with the trust at the same time. You can't sort of blindly follow everything, but you've got to trust that what you're seeing is there, but then ask the right questions and do what's necessary to uncover what that thing really is. Like once you've done it loads of times, you can just feel it and you know. But to start with, you can get a little bit tricked, but this is what we train people in.
It's so, I love listening to you talk about your trainings, and I might join one of yours because it's funny when I did a training and was doing energy work, you know, so much was about like the process. Obviously trust yourself and go with it and you'll find your own way. But it was like the process and how you use your hands and blah, blah, blah. And I really struggled with that because I felt like once I even would start doing it on my own, I'm like, the whole process went out the window and it became a whole different thing. It was like, and sometimes I would tell my friends that I would go through the course with, I'm like, I don't even use my hands a lot of times. Like sometimes I'm just sitting there. And so listening to you talk and teach that way was, what's the word? It's not affirming, but it was very relieving almost in a sense of like, okay, yeah, like I'm not crazy and it was really interesting. And I love when you talk about imagination because I feel like when I teach my classes, just regular meditation classes, I say that all the time too. When I do guided journeys, I'm like, your imagination's real. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about imagination because I find that to be such a fascinating subject of, it is a reality. It's just not the reality we're conditioned to live by.
Yeah. I mean, we're taught that if we can't touch it or, you know, it's not there with any of our five senses, it's not real, you know, but actually imagination is reality. It's just another space in the quantum that we may not have moved into alignment with yet. It's like a lot of people say, oh, you know, I've just invented this new space rocket. I've just invented this new iPhone. I've just invented this, that, but nobody invents anything. All people do is just download information from the field. So whenever you're imagining something, you think, oh, I'm making this up. I'm creating this, but actually you're not. What you're doing is accessing a reality field, a potential that is actually there and is available. And all you need to do is just to plug into that, lock into that, and then decide you're going to go there. And then your vibration will match into it and everything will move into alignment. And then that kind of imaginative, creative quantum space will become your physical reality. This is manifestation. You know, imagination is reality. You know, if you see it in your mind, it's real. It's just the way that it is. You can't see something in your mind that isn't real.
Do you feel like as a kid you had a big imagination?
It was massive. I was always like, yeah, I lived in my head, in my imagination a lot. I mean, as a child, I always saw myself on a stage. I always wanted to do something. I didn't know what it was. When I was a teenager, I thought I was going to be like an MC. Like my friend had like turntables and we used to go to parties and we used to DJ and I used to MC for him. And I always thought maybe I'm going to do something along that kind of work. But really what I was seeing is me on stage speaking to people about spirituality, meditation, healing, training, and all that sort of stuff. But as a kid, I was always like away with the fairies as well, you know, I was never really kind of there. I just always felt somewhere distant. I don't know where I was, but I was never really here and now, you know?
When you first went to the planet and you met like the Lyrans, I always pronounce it incorrectly. Yeah. Was that the first time like you truly felt like home?
Well, I was in New Zealand in 2009 and I was meditating in my mate's pyramid. Old fella called Mike. We used to have a mixed martial arts gym in New Zealand. And he did the marketing for the local rugby team. And they used to come and do their strength and conditioning training there. So we became really good friends. He had a pyramid in his garden. I used to go around there every afternoon and meditate. I didn't actually know how to meditate until I met him. He taught me how to meditate. But he taught me how to meditate with my eyes open. And I was meditating in the garden one day. And this little space pod, like there was a blue being inside of it, comes down and lands in the garden next to the pyramid. So I brought my light out of my body. I went and got inside and we flew through a portal for 4 or 5 seconds, came out the other side. We were above water. There was a beach. I get out of the space pod, walk up the beach, and there's about 200 of these blue beings. And I knew I was on Alpha Centauri and I knew they were Lyrans. I'd never even heard of either of them. And they came and they hugged me. And I felt this level of love that just blew me away. And it felt like I was with my family. Yeah, it just felt like I was home.
You know, when you talk about your guides, sometimes I like how I mean, you obviously have a army is not the right word, but like an arsenal, a huge group of people, team that are always working with you from other dimensions. But I love how you describe, I think it was when you maybe got your first, was it James?
Yeah.
But I love how when you talk about him, you were like, oh, he's blunt, he's honest, like that's who I go to for advice. And it just made me giggle, this idea, would some guides not be honest? Like, talk about the different personalities and kind of what you have with you.
Yeah, so like James was the first one I met who was an old guy. And I actually met him, the guy that told me about the lady that I went to see, he was my best pal, and his mate, we all went to this talk. And it was about 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar. And when I was there, the guy that was giving the talk, he shapeshifted from a human to a reptilian. And the lizard was right in front of my face. So we kind of got attacked psychically that evening from this guy. And it was that night that I was in the shower that James came to see me. And he said, I'm here to help you because of what happened earlier. So I met him. And then I met Lana. I met Crusoe, who was this massive Portuguese warrior. I met Tanan, who's a Native American Indian. I've got Reza and Fluffy. They're two owls. Angelina's a fairy. I've got loads of guides that I work with. We got the Star Magic team. We got Alana Wisdom, two unicorns. We got Artorias, who's a centaur. Gregory, who's a dragon. I mean, Rianna's a player. There's bundles of them. I've got Dieron and Deraquai, my two Lyran guides. So like, and also like the Lyran lions and lionesses, like the seventh dimensional beings. I mean, I was walking through Birmingham with my son last year to go to a group healing. And I looked left and right, and literally there were hundreds of them, like, walking with us. I was like, holy shit, I couldn't believe it.
Like, there you meant, like, so all the people that were going with you were actually Lyrans just in this incarnation?
No.
Or were they
multi-dimensional lions, like, they were just in the space. But I could see them. Yeah, like diamond and crystal white lions. They were massive.
So when you see all those beings around you, do you kind of, is that just your perception? Because you talk a lot about like when you start, you know, balancing your brain and when you start actually, you know, working on your pineal gland, you'll see the codes just out there. You say that all the time. You'll see the code, you'll see the geometry, you'll see it. Is that like when you just walk in regular life, is that what you see now?
Well, no, but I'm looking at you on my laptop, and between me and the laptop, there's all these codes.
I'm not a reptilian.
They're just like translucent, transparent. So I see the computer, but I see these codes moving and sort of twisting, and they spiral, and then they kind of disappear and then reappear. And they always take on this kind of same format, but they're different sizes, slightly different.
What's the format?
So like the only way I can describe it is like a parachute. So you've got these like horizontal streams of light at the top. Let's say there's three of them. Then you get this code in the middle in a circle, and then these vertical streams of light at the bottom. If there's three streams at top, there'll be like one at the bottom. If there's seven at the top, there might be three at the bottom. There's always more horizontal streams than vertical ones. So the shape of it is like that, like a parachute, and they spin and they create a spiral. And these are what we call star magic codes of consciousness. So if I'm going to go into a healing session, I'll just bring them through my body and just run them into the human being's hologram that I'm working with, or sometimes bring them straight into the hologram, depending.
How often do you feel like you're getting new codes?
24/7, 365. Like if you walk down a road, like let's say you're in a busy town and your third eye's switched on, you're constantly uploading and you're constantly downloading into the planet. You're constantly uploading to the star grids and downloading. You're constantly communicating with everyone else in that space. There's communication everywhere. Everybody's transferring information. It's literally like some mad, crazy supercomputer on steroids, you know?
So is there the ability, I'm jumbling this. Like a computer, can you shut down?
You want the human, I mean, yes. You mean shut it off, like disconnect?
No, well, can the vessel not be able to handle it and shut down?
Okay, so like in terms of like the level of code and the level of vibration, yes. So like this is why the physical component is so important. Like we have like a lifestyle in Star Magic: exercise, qigong, breath work, cold showers. All of this stuff is a big part of it, the physical element, because our body has a nervous system. It's 45 miles of electrical wiring. And that nervous system is our communication network. It also uploads and downloads frequency. We've also got a kind of our central channel, which mm-hmm. connects to God worlds and down into the earth. That runs electrical and electromagnetic frequency. If our physical body isn't strong, we can't handle these upgrades. So it's like, if you, let's say you've got an iPhone 10 and you've mm-hmm. got software on it. Let's say some new software comes out, but you can't afford to buy a phone. So the new software, you upgrade the iPhone 11 software onto the iPhone 10. It's okay. It works. It might even work on iPhone 12. Once you start getting to iPhone 13, the hardware won't be able to support the software. So right. The phone's going to start to malfunction. Our physical bodies are the same. Like when I knew about this stuff, but when I really realized it was several years ago, I went to meet this lady in Turkey. At the time, she was 94 and she's probably 100 now. And she runs one of the biggest spiritual organizations in the world. So I ended up meeting her and going into her office with my mate. And we sat there for hours having this really deep, constant conversation about all things multidimensional. And she was so sharp. Like, she was as sharp as anyone that I've ever met. And she was 94. Like, you know. Anyway, we came to the end of the day. And her assistant came in because we were all going to go out for dinner. And her assistant came in with like a motorized Zimmer frame. And the woman like got up, helped herself up, like leaning on the chairs and got onto the Zimmer frame. And I was like, why are you on a Zimmer frame? Like, I've just sat here for 7 hours and we've had the most incredible conversation. You seem sharp as a razor, healthy as anything. I said, what happened? She said, well, for years I've been bringing cosmic energy through my body and I've never done any physical stuff. She said, if I knew what you youngsters know these days with your yoga and your physical exercise and your qigong and all the stuff you do to look after your body, she said, I wouldn't be like this. She said, but my nervous system is fried from the waist down. She said, I won't walk again. It's completely, completely knackered. And that's when I realized everything that we've been doing, training people, doing the physical stuff is so important because everybody wants to fly around the universe.
Right.
But we forget we're physical beings here on the planet. They've got to ground these codes into the planet.
I mean, isn't that the connection? I know I say the same thing in classes. It's like, it's one thing you want to talk to the angels all the time, but if you can't figure out how to walk the earth, then you're kind of missing the point of this incarnation.
Absolutely.
A little bit. So that's fat. Well, you do say something and you were kind of alluding to it here. You've said, and maybe I'm misconstruing it, like we don't to stop necessarily running energy. It's, you've been very clear about it's like, don't run the energy through your body. It's just either be it or it's just use the light codes. Talk a little bit more about that because I want a clarity on that.
I'm getting it wrong. Yeah, you do want to run frequency through your body because we've got to stay plugged in. Like, you know, we're not separate from our environment. We're part of our environment, you know? Like, we're grounded into the earth. We're grounded into the stars. And that electromagnetic frequency that runs from the God worlds, from source all the way down into Mother Earth, it's a cylinder that comes around our body. And that's what supports us. We have to keep running that frequency. Keeps us clear, keeps us stable, keeps us aligned. When you're working on other people, say for example, you go and learn Reiki or some other modality, what they do is they get you to run frequency through your body and out of your hands. Now you've got 4,000 nerve endings in each hand. You've got 400 in each foot. Now, if you run the energy through your hands all the time, they're going to get overloaded and stimulated with electricity too much. And what happens is people get vertigo, people get heart pain, liver pain, they get headaches, nauseousness, because they're overloading the electricity in their hands. People will be like, oh, my hands feel really hot. This is amazing. No, that's dangerous. Like if you feel my hands, they're always cold because my insides of my body is like an air conditioning unit. So I always keep my temperature regulated. So if I'm working on someone, I don't overheat, but I never run energy through my hands. Like I was saying before, we've got 45 miles of electrical wiring, our nervous system. We've also got 10 billion miles of DNA. We can store so much data, so much information on the inside of our body. Now, when you get your whole body functioning properly, you can emit light from every little part of your body. Forget your hands. You know, you can train your nervous system just to emit code. Then you become a walking, talking healing machine. So what a lot of people do is they neglect the preparation phase. For us in Star Magic, the preparation is everything. It's why most people don't do very well in life, because when their opportunities come, they're not prepared mentally, physically, emotionally. They haven't got the courage, the confidence to take action. When you go into a healing session, you shouldn't have to do anything. The preparation is done in the background. You prepare your nervous system. You prepare your electromagnetics. You prepare your Merkaba field so that when you go into a healing session, you open your heart, you set the frequency in motion, and then you just sit back and observe, and you're really still and you don't do anything. You don't get in the way. What a lot of people do is they try and do stuff when they're healing. They're blocking it. They're getting in the way. All you've got to do is open your heart, set the intention, plug into the like right frequencies, and then boom. Everything's just taking place. And it's like just watching a movie play out, you know? So it's preparation is the key. But what a lot of people do is they run energy through their hands, and it's dangerous. It's okay if you're doing 2 or 3 healings a day. You might get away with it. But if you're doing 20, 30 healings a day, I mean, I've been to exhibitions. I was in Los Angeles at the Conscious Life Expo. First year I went there, I think it was. It's like 2017, 2018. And I gave a talk, post-conference talk. It was like 10 o'clock at night. And I had 2 or 3 minutes of the talk left. I said, does anyone want to be a guinea pig? I'll do a quick demonstration. Everybody in the room stood up. And they all formed a queue. I was like, what am I going to do? So I thought, you know what? Let's just work through everybody. So I worked for about 2 or so hours and went through every single person there, like doing this technique on them. One after the other. When you start working like that, you can't be running energy through your hands, because you're just going to get overloaded. It's too much. You're going to get tired and drained. You can't use your own energy. You've got to be using the frequency and the code in the space. So this is what we teach people how to do. We train people how to do their healing or facilitate their healing and stay completely tip top. You know, do the preparation so that when you go into the healing, you haven't got to do anything. It should be effortless. The real work is in the training. It's like if you're a rugby player or a football player or a tennis player, if you don't train properly, you're going to get smashed on the pitch or the park or the court. But if you train and prepare properly, when you go to play, it's going to be much easier and you've got a great chance of winning.
Do you feel like, you know, you talk a lot about also how some of your training was in your meditations, and you'd be going down in Egypt, you'd be going down into the teaching schools, like at the base of the pyramids. And you spent a lot of time there, right? I mean, you did a lot of training there. Do you feel like the ability to call in, because you say it, and I love that, how you say it, how you like, don't call me a healer because I'm really just the vessel. You're like, the hollow bone, which I appreciate and love. And do you feel like the more you're able to tap into your guides or other realms, the more, profound the healing is going to be?
Yeah, I mean, when we're tapping into these other realms, a lot of the time we're tapping into other versions of us anyway. So a lot of people say, you know, you're tapping into your guides and stuff. Sometimes they are other beings, you know. Ultimately, we're all connected on some level, but most of the beings that are in your space helping you out, they're other versions of you. You are these beings in other realities right now. And all you're doing is bringing your multidimensional selves into this now space to empower you to facilitate the healing. So yeah, definitely. When you bring all of those pieces of you back home, you become unstoppable. You can create anything, you know, like anything's possible. Like we've had people where we've given them new lungs, like new kidneys, new gallbladders, you know. I mean, they've got no gallbladder, then how can they have a gallbladder? They've got no thyroid, how can their thyroid suddenly appear? You know, it's wild. I mean, every time it blows me, I'm like, no way, it's crazy. Like, it's not like it's boring. You're not like, oh, it's another day at the office. It's like absolutely fascinating every time, you know?
It is. No, it's amazing. It really... It's funny because you said in one of your books, you were saying how, you know, every once in a while, if I get like the desire to have a drink and like I go to a club and I'm like, compared to the life I live, this is so boring. You're like, and I'd rather be off like flitting off into the universe, like going into all these interesting worlds. I mean, it's really amazing how huge your life is. Like it feels very expansive. Huh?
Yeah. There's so much to explore. Like we do this exercise on our training where we show people how to activate their nervous system and then bring their nervous system out of their body. to really expand the light. And we get people to expand it through the whole universe and then try and bring that light back into the body. It's like you're trying to get, like, I don't know, the Empire State Building inside your little finger. It's like near enough impossible. You got to squash it in, and it's quite painful. You realize how kind of like constricted we are in these vessels, you know? And as soon as you kind of come into that heart space, you drop your brain waves, you drop your heart rate down, and you just start to fly. You feel so free.
Do you feel like maybe that's why you took to everything so quickly? You know, because it really does feel like, yes, you were shown these amazing experiences and things that kind of started to make you think differently. But it feels like it was pretty fast for you. And not only fast, but like your ability to accept and create. I mean, the fact that with this woman, you were learning how to, you know, bilocate and, you know, do all these amazing things, which for some people, it's a lot harder. They're just so much more locked in. Do you think there was an element of that? Maybe because of your childhood, this idea of like, it felt like freedom. It felt like escape. It felt.
I know I came here to do this.
Right. So you just found it.
If I go back to my birth, what, why did those men come in black masks and try and like mess my mother up? They did that what happens is when you rape a child, it activates their kundalini and it breaks the base of their brainstem, and then you can create multiple personalities inside someone's brain. That's why when people go and shoot a load of kids in a school, the next day they can't remember because they switched out the personality and put another one in. So they knew that I was coming to the planet.
So it's an element of control, like just there. It's like a joystick.
Yeah, absolutely. We deal with so much of this. It's crazy what goes on in the world. And it's kind of, you know, when you understand it, you understand it. But if you don't, and then you hear about it, it's like, whoa, this is a next level shit. This is crazy. It's like out of a movie or something, but it's happening. Yeah, they can literally switch people's, they can take control of someone's brain just like a computer.
So is that something you, when you're doing healings, can see in some people, like a split or something where you can tell something like that happened?
Yeah, there's different types of programming. Like, so they have this thing called snowflake flake. You know, snowflake is like it's like a geometry with all different points on it. So what they do is they place a snowflake into the base of the head, and each of those points will be a different personality. And they take a child through a very specific traumatic period of time. It could be a year, it could be 4 years, where they create all these personalities and link the personalities into the snowflake, then erase all of the memory of what took place to make it happen. And the child doesn't even know that it's in there. And then they can make the child be an assassin. They can make the child be a lover. They can make the child be whatever to extract information or go and do like a weapon, you know?
So do you feel that it was used on you?
Absolutely. I remember as a child that I always wanted to go in the army. I was crazy about it, you know, and I love training. So I was like, I can't wait to get in the army, be disciplined. You know, I used to run for miles every day with a stick in my hand, pretending that it was a gun. And like, I just wanted to go to war. And when I think I was 15 or 16, I applied to go to the army. So I got an interview at the army office, and I was walking down there. I was walking through town, and I looked into the pub where we all used to go and drink. And my mate was in there having a pint at lunchtime. And I thought, let me just go in and see how he is. So I went in and spoke to him. I ended up having 3 pints of Stella. And so when I came out of the pub, I went to the army office and I stunk of alcohol. So they kicked me out. So it was like they tried to program me to get me to go there. At the same time, the other side, the good side of the universe, put my mate in there to get me to go and have a drink because they knew I'd succumb to that. And then that was it. I stunk of booze when I went there, so I got out of it, you know? So there's always both sides of the coin at work, both sides of the force.
How many of your friends from that life, like the life of like crime and stuff, are you still close to?
Three.
That's impressive, actually.
Yeah, they're good people, you know? And I actually spoke to one of them again yesterday for the first time in a little while. Yeah, we speak now and again. You know, and when we speak for hours, you know, and it's interesting because a couple of them now, they'll say things to me and like, they're starting to understand the universe, and they're starting to understand that I wasn't crazy all these years, you know? And so it's like they say things to kind of sort of say, we know that you're not crazy, but we just can't admit it yet. You know what I mean? You know, so they'll say it without saying it. And we have some beautiful conversations, you know? So yeah, it's really cool. And they'll be friends that I'll speak to for eternity, you know?
Have any called you to be like, fuck my back, I need help or something?
One of my friends called me because his dad was really ill. Oh. Yeah, and so I did some work on his dad, yeah.
Because it is interesting. It's like, I don't believe until I want to believe.
Or you're kind of forced into the situation where you got no other option. You know what? Fuck it. Let me just give it a shot and see if it works, you know?
Yeah, because something means that much to you. You're incredible. Everything you're doing for the world is amazing. You know, talk a little bit and then I'll let you go because I know I've kept you for so long, a little bit about all these healing centers you're building. And you hinted at it a little bit in the beginning of the conversation, how it came to you, but chat a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we started Star Magic in 2016, and then literally a couple of months afterwards, I was meditating, and this blue being called Derek White, the one that took me in the spacecraft, he came and sat next to me, and the town disappeared that I was looking over, and I saw these orange dots, and there was 13 of them spread around the Christ Consciousness grid, and I said to him, what are these? He goes, they're healing centers, you've got to build them. I said, well, if I build them, who's going to work in them? I said, I can't do this on my own. He said, we've got to train people. So I ran home, designed this training program, and then put it up online, and people just turned up from all over the world. I remember being in the classroom on the first day and saying to everybody, why are you here? I've got no clue why you're here. I was just shocked, you know. But I'd written the book and people had read it and just wanted to come along. And the training went amazing. And then all the other ones have been amazing since, and they've got better. But these healing centers, I was like, this seems like a brilliant idea, but I haven't got a clue how this is going to manifest. But let's just tell everybody about it anyway. So I just told everybody, I'm going to be building these healing centers. I'm going to be building these healing centers, you know, because, you know, it's what I was told, and something inside of me just blurted it out everywhere. So anyway, over the course of a few years, I was meeting different people. And then what happened is a guy from Madeira, a Portuguese guy, he came to our one of our workshops in London, not a training, a workshop, and he had a brain tumor the size of an orange. And the doctor said to him, you'll be dead in 8 weeks. So anyway, he came to the workshop. I did some healing on him afterwards. This was 5-6 years ago, and he's got no brain tumor, you know? And he became a really good friend, and he came back from Madeira one day, and he said, I think there's a bit of land that would be good for one of your healing centers. So he took me to meet the kind of like local mayor, president type guy of this kind of like city. And they had this bit of land that had been repossessed. It was off the market and it was 49 acres. We ended up buying it. And then another lady came to see me from England when I was doing a workshop in Bucharest. And she said, I've got this bit of land for sale. We're trying to build a healing center, but it's not working. And someone told me to come and offer it to you. And we went there and it was amazing. So we bought it. And then we bought it somewhere in the UK. So we've been buying these bits of land, but the first one we're going to be doing is in Transylvania in Romania. If you go to our website, you can see all the 3D models. Like, it's going to be, it's on 15 acres. It's built out of all this sacred geometry, not the kind of geometry you get in textbooks, but this kind of off planet geometry. It's all curves and spirals, and it's amazing. And so we're in the process at the moment of getting planning permission. And, you know, once we get planning, we're going to start building. Yeah. So we're going to build 13 of them, and they're all going to be on very specific points around the planet. And the first one we're building is called Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus is the 13th constellation in our zodiac. A lot of people think there's 12, but actually there's 13. The whole world is revolving around 13. So
I was just going to ask you to talk more about the number 13. So thank you. Keep going.
So like when we come into our mother's womb, 49 days after conception, 9 and 4 is 13, 8 little cells appear. They're a Merkaba field. And also DMT, dimethyltryptamine, appears. So we're like this kind of geometrical, hallucinogenic kind of being in our mother's womb, you know, and we grow into these humans. And the number 13, there's so much about the number 13, but we're building the 13th constellation first. And Ophiuchus is known as the healer in the skies, and also the snake bearer, and it also links to the human nervous system. Like, each of our constellations, Pisces is the feet, Ophiuchus is the nervous system, and all the other ones in between. So we're building the nervous system first, which is the communication element, which is the most important part of the human body, and then we'll add in the feet and the arms and all that afterwards, which will be the other healing centers. So this is what we're planning on doing. Yeah,
That's so fascinating. You know, you were talking about the sacred geometry. Expand a little bit about, I heard you say somewhere like the Fibonacci, we have to get off the Fibonacci and go more towards the crystalline. Did I misunderstand that? Talk a little bit about the difference.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I got a message earlier today from a guy.
And, that's
yeah, he said to me, I've just had my Merkaba field activated by this lady who did it with Fibonacci mathematics. And she's spinning my top tetrahedron anti-clockwise and my bottom tetrahedron clockwise at certain spin ratios. And you should never do that. Like the top tetrahedron, the masculine electrical one, always goes clockwise. The bottom one, the female one, always goes anti-clockwise. But she'd plugged it into the Fibonacci mathematics, so it had skewed it. So but basically, what it is with the Fibonacci mathematics, they're not plugged into the zero point. So if you look at the Fibonacci mathematics, like 1 plus 2 equals 3, 2 plus 3 equals 5, 3 plus 5 is 8. So 8 has to eat 5 and 3 to make it. And then 13 has to eat 8 and 5. So it's a dog-eat-dog world, which is the world we've been living in. Oh, I need to crush you to get up the ladder. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, let's go up the ladder together and thrive together. That's new consciousness. The old consciousness, let's beat this person down so I can get ahead. And those mathematics symbolize that. These mathematics are what the banking system runs off of. You know, it's corrupted mathematics that has no source connection. Whereas the crystalline mathematics is like 0 plus 1 is 1. 0 plus 1 plus 1 is 2. 0 plus 1 plus 1 plus 2 equals 4. 0 plus 1 plus 1 plus 2 plus 4 equals 8. And it just continues going. So all of the numbers always make the next number. So each number has a direct connection back to the zero point. That is the mathematical structure that we have to move to. There were two timelines playing out, the crystalline and Fibonacci timelines on Earth, and they crossed over last November, but between the 8th and the 10th of November last year.
Huh. And
the timelines are getting further and further apart. And if you're on the Fibonacci time spiral at the moment, you haven't got that long before you're not going to be able to get into the crystalline spiral because they're getting further and further apart. So people need to act quickly.
How do you know which one you're on?
I mean, if you go into meditation and ask, you know, ask your heart will tell you. Ask your heart which level of DNA you're at, which timeline spiral, and you're on the crystalline spiral.
That's so interesting. Yeah,
there are a lot of people that aren't.
It's, you know, and then you talk about like, so we're in this process of ascension. Does that have to do with it then? Like if you're not on that spiral, like if you're on a different path, a different timeline, is one timeline the ascending and the other one not?
I mean, everything's kind of ascending, but some things are going to move faster than others. And the people that are on this lower frequency timeline, they're going to stay stuck in duality. You know, it's not to say that in that dualistic space, things won't ascend, but it's going to be so, so slow. But when you move to that new timeline, things are speeding up all the time. The frequency's rising, consciousness is expanding, and we're moving more into love. You know, this fifth dimensional is all about recognizing polarity. And once we recognize polarity and that contrast, we can start to move into unity. The top end of 5D is unity. And then you move into the sixth dimension, which is proper to unity consciousness. And then what we've got coming next is the seventh dimensional grid structures, which is the fusion grids. So once everybody's unified, you've got to fuse that. So I'm actually leaving on Monday to go to 15 different countries. When I was doing this work with the grandfathers I was telling you about earlier, they gave me 15 locations. They said to me, you need to go and buy two lots of crystals for each location, these eggs and these kind of clear quartz crystals. You need to go to these locations and bury the crystals. And I was okay. Sounds like a great plan. So I was asking, what are these grids? And they told me they're the new fusion seventh dimensional grids to hold the architecture for the new divine mother frequency. So I got a big map of the world, put it on my kitchen table, and I started putting these dots on these different locations. Then I drew all the dots together and it created the perfect dragon's wing. So it was unbelievable. So we're going to build these new kind of like dragon grids, which we're going on Monday. It's a 5-week trip. We're going to Ethiopia, different crazy places.
One dragon wing?
just one dragon wing yet. And they've started giving me the countries for the tail. So it's going to be a whole dragon. But the first part is the dragon wing, yeah.
And do you think the whole dragon will be the fusion grid, or is this something totally different?
No, the whole dragon will be the fusion grid, yeah.
So
we're going to these countries now, and then in December we're going to go to New Zealand, Hong Kong, which would be the tail. And I'm sure before the end of this year we'll download the second wing, and then there'll be the body. And yeah, it's interesting.
That is interesting. Okay, and then I'll let you go, I promise. The problem is you're too stimulating, and I'm very fascinated and could talk to you forever. Talk about dragons, period. Like, obviously, I think this is a good example, too, of imagination and reality, of clearly this is something that keeps coming out in lore and folklore and stories and movies, children's books. So talk about what they are in the universe.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back like billions of years, like the dragons, they weren't very nice at all. Like pretty much all dragons at one point were in a very, very dark space, and they were creating a lot of pain and misery in the universe, in multiple universes. But the dragons have been through their own healing process, their own ascension, a little bit like humans are going through their own ascension now and trying to alchemize that dark and light and come into a space of equilibrium. But the dragons went through a long, long ascension cycle. There are still some dragons that aren't very nice, but there are a lot of the dragon communities are there to help. The dragons actually helped build the grid systems of Earth, the original grid systems, the ley lines, the architecture. They helped Merlin. So like, I think it was like 12 or so million years ago, Merlin, dragons, some other kind of architects, they helped build the structures. And the
Do you ever work with Merlin?
I have done work with Merlin in the past, yeah. Mm. Yeah, we used to do a lot of work at the very start of Star Magic. He was always around. He was always around, but we've had to go off on a bit of a tangent and work with different energies, different frequencies, but he's always there, and he's always watching, and he's always guiding, and he's a powerful soul. Yeah, he created like the living libraries. Earth is one of those living libraries. You know, all the gold resources, all the metals, all the crystals, all of this stuff. It can store so much information here. It's why there's been so many wars over the planet, because of the stargates, because of the crystal content, the mineral content. There's many different reasons, but yeah.
All right, sorry. And so keep going with the dragons. So there are good ones that are...
So the dragons, we work... Dragons are great healers. Dragons are great grid workers. Dragons are great architects. Dragons are great healers. They're good for battle, but not all dragons like going into battle. They like to sort of hang around in the background and be unseen and sort of be a little bit more stealth. But we do have some good dragons that we sometimes go to battle with, because there are spiritual battles that we get involved with. But the dragons, I mean, there's dragons in the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th dimension. There's dragons that have an inner Earth complex here on planet Earth. There's dragons that have several like fifth dimensional communities, isn't the wrong word, probably like multi-dimensional layers that you have above planet Earth up in the sky, you know, in different locations. They play a big part in humanity's ascension. Back in 2017, I think it was August, like the dragons orchestrated the activation of the crystal cathedrals. So there's five crystal cathedrals in higher dimensional spaces within Earth. And because humans were messing up ascension, we weren't getting it very right a few years ago, the dragons activated the temple spaces in the Earth. And so loads of plasma started getting pumped up. And that's why there's been this massive consciousness expansion over the last few years. They're always there helping and watching.
Now, you said some dragons have inner Earth complex? Is that what you said?
Yeah, not like a complex, like I feel bad about this, but like a complex, like a space, like a temple complex, like a complex, like an architectural complex. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there are some actual dragons living on the Earth in 3D?
No, not. There are some dragon beings shape-shifting into humans in this third dimensional space, but there are no dragons in this third dimensional space, but they're operating in our planetary space, but not in this dimensional field. So they're operating like in a fourth, fifth, sixth dimensional frequency band.
But yeah. Clearly we pull them in constantly because we see it in so much of our like entertainment and our literature. And I mean, so it's fascinating to me, like how we're on that wavelength.
Because they want the truth to be told. They want the truth to be told. Like, because if you go back, if you look in a lot of films and stuff, dragons are always the bad ones. You know, they're always like the bad, right? This bad, but really actually dragons are lovely. And dragons want us to share the truth about dragons. Dragons did come from a very, very ancient lineage of bad dragons. But like over the course of billions of years, the dragon communities have become beautiful.
Mm. And I do feel like there's been a change of that in our like literature and stuff, where you actually see books, movies, whatever, where the dragons are actually the good guys. Yeah. So that is interesting. So it's working. I love that. All right. I've taken so much of your time. You are fascinating and incredible, amazing. When do you go off on your trip?
On Monday. Yeah, Monday we're leaving.
And so how many crystals are you bringing with you?
We're taking, I think, 30 crystals. Yeah, 30.
How big are each crystal?
Nah, they're not big. Like the eggs are probably about like 2 inches tall. They're only small. And the crystal shards are like that. So yeah, they're not that big. But they're powerful. Yeah, they're like dragon eggs, like, and these crystal shards. They're really, really, really beautiful.
Were you directed exactly like which crystals to get and where to get them?
Yeah, I was told, get these, get them from there. Yeah, yeah. And the place that I needed to get the first lot of crystals from, they only had 2 of the eggs. And they said, don't get them from anywhere else. So I had to
wait.
Yeah, I had to wait. I had to put an order in and make sure I got them from this place. Yeah, so. Yeah.
So now you're locked and loaded.
Locked and loaded, ready to go. Yeah, I've got. I'm not at home at the moment. I'm at my friend Cherie's house. She's our video editor. She's a good friend and a beautiful star sister. She's coming with me to video the whole experience. And my girlfriend's flying over from Romania on Sunday. She's coming too to help me with the grid work. So yeah, it's going to be a team effort.
Okay, one more question, just because you said so. When everyone uses the word starseed, and I feel like it's you saying some people are special and are starseeds, like there's some kids or people that are put on this earth to be starseeds, but aren't we all starseeds?
We're all from the stars.
Right.
We're all star family. I mean, there are some beings on this planet that did not come from the stars because they were made here in laboratories and things like that. But most humans are starseeds. We're stardust. You know, our human bodies emit 10,000 times more light per cubic square centimeter than the sun. The only reason we don't blind people is because we've got 100 trillion protons inside every single cell. So we're drawn in like into the black holes. But really, we should be blinding everyone. We're so fucking bright. It's amazing, you know? But yeah. Yeah, we're amazing, amazing humans. We're all from the stars. And we've got every single galaxy and every single star system in every cell of our body. You know, there's so much firepower inside of us. Like when people say, oh, Jerry, I'm tired and I feel weak and blah, blah, blah. Just go into your body and command the access of that energy. There's so much. We should never get tired, you know, because we've got so much access. We've got infinite access to infinite storehouses of frequency.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, that's a perfect way to finish, as a reminder of who we all are. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I hope the trip is incredible.
I appreciate it. It's going to be awesome. Yeah. Have a beautiful rest of the day, an amazing week, and just good luck with everything.
Thank you.